Are you an entrepreneur that would like to quickly free up and create more cash flow and lasting wealth? Welcome to the Chris Miles Money Show. Chris Miles is a cash flow expert and the financial advocate for the entrepreneur. Chris will teach you how to create more freedom and more prosperity right now, not about saving 25 to 40 years from now. It's all about creating wealth and prosperity today. He's been featured on U.S. News, CNN Money, Bankrate.com, interviewed internationally on TV and radio, and has a high reputation for getting his clients fast, life-altering financial results with his company, Money Ripples. Learn more at MoneyRipples.com. Now, here's your host, Chris Miles.
Hello, my fellow Ripplers. This is Chris Miles, your cash flow expert and anti-financial advisor. Welcome you out to a wonderful show today, a show that's for you and about you. Those of you that want your money to start working for you so you don't have to work so hard for your money. So you can work because you want to, not because you have to. It's all about creating that time, that freedom, that cash flow, and all that prosperity that you can have right now, not about saving for 50,000 years from now. And so welcome you guys on because I'm excited that you guys are Ripplers because you're here not just because you want to prosper yourself, but you want to be a blessing to everyone around you. You want to create a ripple effect in others' lives. And so excited to have you guys on today. Thanks for sharing the show and being a part of it and following us as well. So today I got a special guest here that's actually a repeat guest. We've had him on before, but always great to have like good quality people here. And especially with Lane. Lane's got such a timely show for so many of you, because I know many of you will ask me this question of, what do I do? Like, how am I going to be able to get out of this? How am I able to get out of my job so I can actually invest full time or use these investments to get me out of it? And so, you know, the cool thing about Lane is Lane's actually done it. You know, unlike many people, Lane actually has been able to get out of the rat race himself. He's been able to go full time as an investor. He actually just recently got out of his job, and it was a very nice job too. Was recently able to get out of that. He now owns 2,600 units. That's 2,600 doors, guys. He's got 2,600 units. He's a writer for Forbes and is an Amazon bestseller. And he's even got his own radio show as well that we'll talk about as well. So, Lane, welcome back to our show.
Hey, thanks for having me again, Chris.
Yeah, you bet. So for those that maybe had not heard the last episode, because that was probably like 100 episodes ago, you know, give them a little bit of background about yourself.
Yeah, so you know, I'm 33 years old now, but about 10 years ago, I bought my first single family home just to live in. Then I started renting it out, and that was the start of everything, sort of an accidental landlord. And then one went to two, and then I started to buy out-of-state turnkey rentals. And that was really kind of what vaulted me the last few years to apartment buildings and such later.
Yeah, you're going more like multifamily type stuff, aren't you? More apartments and that sort of thing.
Right. But like, you know, like I'm sure you've used this analogy with the rocket ship. Most of the fuel and energy takes to get a few inches off the ground, right? And to get that first few rental properties is always the hardest.
Oh, yeah. I actually just had a mastermind in my house this last weekend with some of my clients, and that actually came up. And definitely want to get your take on this because, you know, I think the hardest thing for some of my clients have been is if they're just starting in the real estate game and they buy that first property or two or three, and they're looking at the net cash flow, and they're like, wow, I've got a few hundred bucks a month coming in. Cool. You know, maybe I got 300, maybe it's 1,000, but it's not even close to what they need, right? And now they're just kind of in that waiting game. They're trying to build up some wealth, you know, build up some of the cash flows so they can invest some more. What kind of advice do you have for them?
Yeah, so when I start to work with folks and they buy their first rental property, one thing that I know that's going to happen, but they don't realize it themselves is, you know, once they start to buy that one rental that creates a few hundred bucks of cash flow a month, that really turbocharges the savings in the back end. So, you know, if they were sort of semi unmotivated about, you know, crunching down, tightening the belt on their budget, now that motivation is really kicking in because they see the direct results. If they save 20, 30 grand to buy another rental property, that's another 300 bucks coming in. You know, that's half of that car rental or whatever, you know, that nice thing that they want to buy.
Yeah, definitely. When you start to see money coming in, it kind of redirects your priority to say, all right, is this, these other expenses I have, are they really worth it? Or should I be saving more? This 401k, why am I keep putting money in this when I could be taking this and making way more and getting out of the rat race, like in your case, before 59 and a half by, you know, only a quarter of a century.
Right, right. I mean, the cash flow on this stuff is usually, what, 5 to 10%, which isn't too much, but that sort of mimics what you're getting in the stock market. But that's just the tip of the iceberg when you're also looking at the mortgage pay down by your tenant, the tax benefits, and then if you do get an appreciation, which is usually icing on top of the cake.
And that's what I noticed is the hard part for people is that waiting part, you know, it's like building that portfolio, but especially when you get to the point where now, like you said, you're paying down the mortgage, there's any appreciation or anything else, then you start to get that lower return on equity. And then as a result, you're like, okay, it's time to reposition, put this into more properties and time to upgrade a little bit. And that might happen, could be 3 years, could be 5, 7 years out, whenever it is. But that's usually when the acceleration starts, I've noticed.
Right, right. I mean, in the beginning, it's like watching grass grow. I mean, you're limited by how much money you can save at the end of the year. I mean, most people starting out, most average Americans barely can save $5,000 a year, right? I mean, even most of my high paid guys, you know, they're able to save anywhere from $20,000 to $50,000 a year, but that's still limited to one rental property a year.
Right.
I mean, it's definitely, it's a slow but surely get rich quick thing.
Right. It's a long get rich quick.
Right. Get rich slow, surely thing.
That's right. And that's the key, right? And so, so for you, I mean, with your experience and everything, I mean, obviously you had to be pretty patient as well as you were building that portfolio and you built a humongous portfolio before you even quit your job. You know, I know some people are like, they probably wouldn't even go that far, you know? And so, I mean, what were some things that helped you stay patient during that period of time?
Well, I mean, part of it is like I didn't really have too many models. I mean, I sort of got around doctors, lawyers, and engineers to kind of mimic what they did. But I mean, it took me a long time to get to where I'm at, where if I knew what I knew now, I probably could get here in like 5 years.
Yeah.
I mean, I would do all sorts of incorrect things. Like I would pay down my mortgages for some strange reason. And
right.
I would refinance them to shorter terms, which is not what you want to do to optimize return on equity.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It took me bought my first one in 2009 and then the 11th one in 2014-15. Mm. I mean, it took so long just to get to double digits.
Right.
I think that's what people don't realize.
That's where it's funny because I've had clients where they say, oh, this is so stressful buying these properties. And I just tell them, like, well, yeah, it's because you're buying them. But once you've bought them, it gets kind of boring. like you're seriously just kind of be in this routine of just collecting the cash, trying to build it up as quick as you can so you can do the next one.
Right. And I mean, I'm a passive investor. So I tell people, if you're spending more than a few hours a week doing this stuff, you're doing it the wrong way.
Right.
I mean, you should be able to do this alongside a high paying job. That was probably why it took me so long to quit, because my day job was pretty good, easy money. And it's hard to, in a sense, it was passive cash flow. Granted, I had to go put on a nice shirt every day and go somewhere, but it was easy money, and it's hard.
Well, what are some other tips that you would give, or now looking back, and you could say, hey, I would do this differently. What would you have done differently, in your situation? I mean, you mentioned not paying them mortgages and whatnot, but what else?
Yeah, I probably would have kind of stepped up to syndications and private placements a little bit earlier.
Why is that?
10 single family homes, if you do the math, is anywhere from $2,000 to $3,000 of passive cash flow a month.
Yeah.
No one's going to retire on that. You're going to need 30 of them. Mm-hmm. And when I had 10 properties, I saw that I had an eviction or two every year. Certainly a big catastrophe or semi-catastrophe that my property manager took care of every quarter. But if you multiply that by three, now you're having an eviction almost every quarter, a big issue coming up more than every month. Mm-hmm. And it's just not really scalable. And for $9,000 passive cash flow, which for a lot of people is enough, but you got to keep growing that, right? You're going to keep growing it. And then you're just creating another job for yourself at that point.
Right. It's part-time still. It's sucking some energy.
Right. I mean, I still think single family homes are the right place to start, but I would have jumped out of it, after the first few properties, knowing what I know now, or the people that I know now.
Yeah. And you actually have a whole, you have a whole pipeline, don't you? Like of deals and syndications and stuff that come up, right?
Yeah. I mean, at some point it's about the people, networking with the right people. But unless you have properties of your own, mm-hmm. and you're able to network in an efficient manner, or you know, provide value, right?
Yeah.
Because nobody really wants to network with some newbie that doesn't really know too much. Mm-hmm. You got to kind of come in with, you know, at least I own a couple properties, and I can speak the lingo. I can add some value to conversations, or, you know, help other people. That's when you can kind of jump up. And that's, I think, on the upper levels, the networking is very much more important than when you're starting out.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And with the deals that you get, are they just accredited investors, or do you actually have stuff for non-accredited investors too? Like normal people working jobs, not making $300,000 a year.
I mean, you know, most of the deals out there are for non-accredited. It's just people just don't have the network to find them. I mean, yeah. I think I've heard a couple stats, anywhere from like 90 to 97% of deals out there are 506B offerings, which accept non-accredited investors.
Right.
So you're just not seeing them because you don't know the people who, you're not in the private networks. You don't know the syndicator. So that's a big thing. And in my opinion, I think those deals are better, because sometimes if a group is going to go out and mass market it and only accept accredited, it's sort of like a Hail Mary, because they don't have the investors in their own database to fund the deal.
Right. Exactly.
So that's sort of a misnomer, I think, a lot of people have about the private placement world.
Now, also, I want to kind of go back to other properties too, because I know you got that, it's, you know, you got the pipeline stuff as well, but with the properties, I know you're in Hawaii, right? And most people would look at places like Hawaii or even on the West Coast. I know you were on the West Coast at one point too. And you specialize in those different areas and doing properties around those areas. And I know a lot of people, they'll say, wait, is it even good to do investing in places like Hawaii where the price is already so high, or California, Washington, you know, places like that? You know, what's your answer to that?
Well, I mean, I prescribe to that, the saying, live where you want, but invest where the numbers make sense.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I go after cash flow just like you, right? Like, so yeah. There's no cash flow in primary markets, period.
Mm-hmm.
If you live in Hawaii, San Francisco, Seattle, New York, Boston, and even Salt Lake, I think, is maybe getting to be a primary market these days.
Getting there, yeah.
You're just not going to have the rent-to-value ratios like a 1% higher or better to be able to cash flow. Not to say you can't make money, you can't increase the value, but personally, my criteria is cash flow day one.
Yeah. And so you actually invest outside of those markets then.
Right, right. So I like to use this as a home base to live my life and play on my computer and look for deals and fly out to a deal when I see one.
And no, I have a lot of people that are kind of, you know, new to the real estate space. Maybe they've done one or two, but they've always just done local. And then I mentioned going to other markets, because a lot of times they'll say they are from Seattle, right? I know you've lived there before. They'll say, oh, it's a horrible time to buy real estate. Why would I buy real estate now? And I have to remind them, like, there's other parts of the country that don't look like Seattle. They didn't have 22% growth in 2017, you know, and things like that. And really for them, it almost becomes a scarier move to even buy a single property outside, out of state. They're like, well, I don't have control. I don't, you know, I can't even see the property. I mean, you might fly out to see it, but what if they're like, you know, they're looking at it from a computer screen. You know, what do you recommend for people like that, or maybe they want to believe they can invest outside of their own area, but they're not sure how to take that leap of faith?
Yeah. I mean, you're a lot kinder than I am. I mean, I just tell them, hey, dude, you got to get out of your comfort zone. Like there's so many, you know, you got to get away from like the dumb money in a lot of these primary markets that people think that they're investors. And you just got to get a little bit outside of that pond and your returns will greatly expand just because you get away from those other type of investors or so-called investors. Yeah. That's one way I look at it. But also, you got to go where, you know, your criteria makes sense. You know, and again, it's mine is cash flow. So I'm going to go out to secondary and tertiary markets. A lot of them are in the southeast, south parts of the country where there's a lot of, you know, good old blue collar jobs out there.
Yeah.
And, you know, as opposed to the primary markets, the sexy markets that everybody thinks about.
Yeah. As one turnkey provider I know says, they like boring markets. Something that's boring, it's like community where people go and they live and work. It's just, you don't see huge hype. You don't see huge, massive growth. You just see steady growth and good numbers.
Right. I think another thing, like the amateur investors, they get confused with what the institutions do. I mean, institutions like life insurance companies, big investment firms, they're going after primary markets because they're after capital preservation.
Right.
Their clients don't really care about getting a 10% plus yield. They just want to keep their capital.
Just want the money to do something, but stay safe.
Right, right. So, but as you know, you and I are mom-and-pop investors. We want to, we're okay taking a little bit more risk, but we want that reward to be there. We walk that razor's edge of risk and reward. Mm-hmm. And in my opinion, it's getting out of your comfort zone for a lot of people on the West Coast and going to the Midwest and South.
So if people want to like find deals with you, you know, like follow you and that kind of thing, what would you recommend? How would they do that?
Yeah, I'd say, you know, check out my podcast. If you're just starting out, I mean, single family homes is like the prerequisite in my opinion. Mm-hmm. I know you people will read out there. They will watch a lot of videos like multifamily is the way to go, you know, yada, yada, because multiple roofs, this or that. But the prerequisite is single family homes. I would say always start there first.
Yeah.
If you screw up, at least single family homes are very forgiving asset class. And it's a good exit strategy. And unfortunately, with a duplex, triplex, or quad, the only person who you can sell that to is another cheapskate investor.
That's right. That's true. I mean, and a lot of times when people ask me that too, they'll say, well, single family homes, you know, why would I do that versus like a fourplex? I'm like, well, I mean, fourplexes, there are some advantages to doing that, you know, lower closing costs overall per door. But the nice thing is with a single family home is that you can sell it to not just investors, but anybody, you know, especially if it's the right price range. You're not buying a $500,000 McMansion. You know, you're buying the kind of properties that people would rent that attracts the right people, but it's also got good cash flow and it can be bought by normal people too.
Right. I mean, my advice is a little contrary, I think. Most high net worth guys would be like, well, I've got more money. I want to go after more roofs, right? I want to go at that quadplex. But I'll say, well, you know, as a high net worth individual, you will likely graduate to private placements and syndications in the next few years. So you want an asset that you can unload very quickly in the next few years or 5 years. And that's the single family home.
That's a great one.
But hey, what do I know, right? I mean, it's just one strategy, right? You have to come up with your own investment criteria and thesis and test it yourself.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Well, awesome. So definitely have them check out your podcast, Simple Passive Cash Flow, right? And then you're also your website too. If they ever want to get a hold of you, your website, is that a good place for them to reach out to you?
Yeah, and you know, email is at lane@simplepassivecashflow.com. Always looking to connect with other investors. And yeah, thanks for having me, Chris.
Absolutely. No, it's always awesome. And again, you know, congrats on escaping the rat race that so many people I know that listen to this show are striving for right now. And you've definitely done it. You've lived it. And crap, you're only 33. I mean, that's pretty awesome.
Yeah. I mean, if anybody's kind of on that verge of like quitting their day job because they've listened to Chris and picked up a bunch of passive investment vehicles, I mean, check out my little article at simplepassivecashflow.com/quit. It's kind of some of the mental exercises I did to make myself feel comfortable and finally take that illogical leap of giving up that 100K salary. That's pretty passive.
Yeah, absolutely. That's great. That's a great resource. I'll put that in the show notes too. Well, Lane, appreciate your time today and just great stuff. And everybody definitely check out his podcast, Simple Passive Cash Flow, as well as, you know, if you've got questions for Lane, shoot me an email, lane@simplepassivecashflow.com. So Lane, appreciate your time today. And everybody else, thank you so much for joining us. I hope you make it a wonderful and prosperous week. And we'll see you later.
Thanks for listening to The Chris Miles Money Show. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes and make us a part of your daily routine. And check out our blogs and learn more about Chris, his services, and how we can help you at moneyripples.com. Join us next time on the Chris Miles Money Show.